This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Hey kid, you looking for answers? Wrong stop.
But if you're into messy stories about addiction, mental health, and the side of life that no one else wants to discuss, come, stay a while. This is Malfunction Junction. I'm Andrew. That's Jay. We're just two guys trying to figure some shit out before the next bus rolls in. Sit tight. Might get weird. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Malfunction Junction. This is Andrew, and I am here with local Boulder and Denver musician Charlie White. Charlie, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's my first podcast, so.
Well, yeah, this is actually kind of that makes two of us, not with my first podcast, but it is the first podcast where we've, on Malfunction Junction, where we've been like, this is, we need to interview somebody, and like, you know, and I was like, I remembered I had reached out to you about a podcast about a year ago about a different thing that I was a part of, and that wasn't even my podcast, it was just someone else's. But I was like, I can maybe find a musician. And I was like, oh yeah, Charlie, I'm sure I could talk to him. And then I remember I saw your Instagram recently, and I was like, oh shit, I got to reach back out to him and do like an actual podcast with him. Yeah. So yeah. I'm glad. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, man. It's an honor to be here.
Right on. Well, I appreciate that. Jay could not make it today, unfortunately. Jay is back over at the Kava Bar working. Jay is also my other co-host. He's the man. He's recently been promoted over there at that's Kava to manager. So it's just like he's working like a dog.
Congrats, Jay.
Yeah, congrats, Jay. But yeah, so first off, I guess I had written down a range of questions, but I don't really expect it to go over everything. I imagine we'll just ramble, which is perfectly fine.
Totally, man. Yeah, I got time, so.
Sweet, sweet. So do I. I have nothing going on tonight. But yeah, so I guess I'll just start out with where you're from.
I grew up in Baltimore, Maryland.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
The bad part of town or the...
A decent part of town. Okay. I grew up right north of the city. Like right north of the city line, and I was a skate rat growing up.
Oh, yeah.
Just skated every day. Wanted to go pro, but grew up skating at this place that was like right on the north edge of the city, kind of. So I grew up hanging out with a lot of county kids and a lot of city kids. So those are two very different worlds.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm aware of that one.
But
I think that's anywhere really, the county kids and the city kids, because it's. Yeah, I can relate to that. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was good having skateboarding. It was this common interest that just brought so many different kinds of kids together. So it gave me a pretty accepting view of people. It gave me some understanding, and I'm grateful that I grew up there.
You know? Very diverse area.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that's America, man. You know,
it's
the right and the left, the white and the black, all in the same melting pot. And, as turbulent as it is there, I'm just very grateful that it gave me perspective. Yeah. Good perspective.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a tough one to grow up in a place where it has so much, whether it's diversity or if it's just disparity, I think, which there's a difference between those, which is just there's people that, I've been to Baltimore a couple of times, and I actually, one of my best friends who I talk about pretty often on this podcast, his name is Malik. He passed away a few years ago, but he was from that general area. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like he grew up in a shit place in a shit town and a little in like a, you know, and was addicted to heroin, and that's how it goes for some people. And then other people, you find, like yourself, that, you know, I gotta either get out of here or like find it something going
yeah,
on, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, to be clear, you know, I grew up in the county and had a very good childhood.
Sure.
You know, it was easy for us. Both parents had great jobs and were super supportive with everything I did, but I did have a lot of friends growing up that was not the case for. Yeah, it made me grateful for what I had, for sure. But
I think that's really all that you can, I mean, hope for in anybody, really. Yeah. Is that they're just grateful for what they got.
Yeah. And, you know, there was this place we skated at all the time. It was called Ridge. Shout out to Ridge in Baltimore. heaven on earth, that place. It was an abandoned building foundation that we had for, I don't know, 10 to 15 years, you know, just to ourselves.
Oh, wow.
And it was like a DIY spot for that long. And so people poured concrete and, you know, we built handrails and, you know, it was a good place for people to do graffiti and tag.
That sounds like heaven.
It was heaven, dude.
that sounds like the best.
There's a documentary about it. Sean Wickstead is the guy who made it.
Okay. I may have seen that documentary. Yeah. I remember something about that.
Ridge. But yeah, that place was so good for so many kids, especially kids that had it rough. You know, it kind of kept them on some kind of path and kept them away from a bunch of shit. Which was happening a lot in Baltimore, you know, like heroin, definitely a big thing there. Opiates were a huge thing there. And, I never got into opiates. I never got into heroin, but, had a couple, like, you know, one good friend go down pretty early, you know, and that was tough to see. And
what was his name?
His name was Dave Tragesser. Hmm. Yeah. It's an amazing skateboarder.
Damn, dude, it's the worst when someone that has like a true, you see the greatness in them and you're like, now they're just either in
I that have dude a, was great. Yeah. And you know, we weren't like best friends, but you know, we were in the same group for a while, and you know, we played music together towards the end of it there too. And
that's tough.
And man, I really looked up to that dude. And it's a shame.
That's a tough one, man.
And then a lot of other friends, you know, or kids that, you know, were on Suboxone and in and out of halfway houses a lot. Mm-hmm. And I just saw it around me constantly. So I was just like, that's just one thing I can't get into.
That's good.
I was luckily only offered it like a couple times, and it wasn't super close to me.
That's good.
You know, we just smoked blunts and drank 40s.
Hey, the life of an American.
Oh,
I think.
It was great.
Yeah, that's the best.
Yeah. Once that place got canned, and turned into a rental storage unit, heartbreaking.
Yeah, of all things, right?
Yeah, then you saw, you know, I guess they're not kids anymore, but you saw Baltimore kind of start to swallow up a lot of these people. You know, some of them went homeless, some of them got real addicted. And,
oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, and it was just like, that was kind of the fabric holding this community together in a way. And
yeah, that's a tough one, man, because it's just, it's heartbreaking when something that is so beloved by a group of people gets, or even just enough that it's, I don't know. We have a spot that back in where I grew up where it had, I don't know what's happened to it now, cause I haven't been back in several years, but it was one of those places where it was like, if this place ever gets like, you know, this place is fucked if this place ever gets, you know, totaled.
Yeah.
And it's like, it happens all the time.
And it was so hard to get a skate park in Baltimore. There was a foundation called the Skate Park of Baltimore, and I think they were fundraising when I was like 15, and I think when I got to be like 25, then they were able to finally build a skate park in downtown Baltimore.
Oh, geez.
One, you know, and any other park that there is just like shitty as hell. You know, it's just, it's not something that
that sucks, man.
Yeah, that the local government or community ever thought was a thing, which it clearly was something that should have happened for so long, because so many kids skate in that area.
And well, but they see it just as like, they see it as hood rat shit.
Yeah,
it's like the, I think, you know, yeah, what I mean. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's, mm-hmm, but I mean, while it can kind of, it can be that. Mm-hmm. It, I mean, anything has the propensity, the possibility to be bad.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's also like, it, this keeps kids from, like you were saying, being on worse shit, being on anything. It just, it just keeps them from fucking up their lives worse just by having something to focus on and get better at. And people don't realize that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, when I was a kid, yeah, skateboarders were still kind of looked down upon, you know, around there. And, cops were fucking horrible, you know.
Yeah,
we were kids and just like trying to skate, and like, yep, I've just had so many, like, it definitely taught me to dislike cops real early, you know. And
which sucks,
and
too,
it does, like, man. They're doing such an important, well, in my opinion, like, it's a necessary, important thing in society.
I agree. Unfortunately it is, but yeah. I mean it would be nice if everybody could just be good to each other all the time, but sometimes they're not, and that's why, yeah, you need police. And it's just, yeah, like, yeah, yeah, it's a tough one.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But yeah, they finally got one built down there. But, you know, and I still now there's just not a lot out there for kids, I feel like. And when I moved out to Colorado, there's like a fucking skate park.
When was that?
2016.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, been here, wow, almost, yeah, 10 years then.
Yeah. Nice, yeah, yeah, I feel like I've lived like 3 lives out here already.
Yeah, I bet, dude. It's, yeah, it's, but, a weird place.
Yeah.
Have you been in Denver the whole, or Denver Boulder the whole time?
Boulder.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I figured that's kind of the, it is not the same thing, but it's definitely like a, people are always, anybody that's listening to this that's not from Colorado is going, oh, so Denver?
Yeah, no, you know, I mean? Feel like Denver and Boulder are so different.
They're very different. Yeah. They're very, very different places.
Yeah.
But it's 45 minutes up the road on a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
If you go up the, I like going up the pretty route. When I go up there.
93.
93, yeah. I got to go up that road. Yeah. You can't. What are you doing going up 25, yeah, if you're doing that? What's, yeah, wrong with you?
Thank,
dude,
God for 93.
Yeah, dude. It takes about the same amount of time, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's fun.
Get to look at the mountains.
Get to look at the mountains. Mm-hmm. See the Flatirons when you drive by that. It's nice. Yeah. It's a nice time.
Yes, it is.
I love this whole area. I'm not a big fan of Denver per se. I do love Colorado, though. My family's been here for a long time.
Oh, wow.
I was born and raised out in California, but my family's been out in Colorado since, like, the 1890s.
Holy shit.
Yeah, down in Montrose, down near Grand Junction.
Because they're OGs.
Well, yeah, like, a long time. And it's, yeah, like, and like, it's weird coming back to a place like that, having not, like, I'm not from here. I was not raised here, but my whole family's from here. And so coming to a place where, there is like a kind of a, it's not quite like Texas where I was raised, or not raised. I lived from like 23 to 27. It's not quite like that, but it, like the like, this is Texas. Don't mess with Texas. It's, yeah, not quite like that.
Yeah.
Like the kind of actual fucking dumbassery of it.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a lot of like pride in people that are like native to Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of like, a lot of those people have like a lot of pride about that.
Yeah.
And so it does feel weird to be like, well, I mean, I kind of am. Mm-hmm. My family's been here since the 1800s, so it's like, that's about as native as it gets, but I'm not.
How old were you when you moved out again?
Of the house?
Into Colorado.
Oh, I think I moved here when I was 27. Yeah, I moved here from, right, Texas. So I'm 29 now. No, I guess I was 26, because I've been here 3 years. 29
cool.
now.
Cool. Did you visit before that at all?
Yeah, I'd been here many times, cool, you know, just growing up, and My family, I got my aunts and uncles that live up in Broomfield.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have my parents still live down in Montrose, down in, and some other family in Delta and Grand Junction and all over the state. I mean, everyone's been here for generations, and it's like, it's cool.
Yeah,
it's cool to come back to the hometown.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool to come back to like my mom's hometown, where it's like, I was recognized as my grandfather's grandson. And none of those people know me. It was just like, oh, you're Daryl's. Nice. And it was just like, nice. The hell, what? Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. But it's definitely, Yeah. So you went, I know you went from there, you went out to college in Berkeley. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So yeah, right out of high school, went to Berkeley. I was writing a lot of songs, you know, even back then, you know, I've been writing songs since I was like 15 and it's been like my thing, I guess.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so I moved out there and I thought I wanted to major in songwriting. And
okay.
Then I took a songwriting class and I was like, fuck this.
Well, I just feel like that's something that you can't really learn in school.
Yeah, I was like,
am I right about that? Like,
yeah, just, well, I mean, I guess some people can, you know,
maybe.
If you want to write a top 40 hit, you know, you can do that. And not to throw shade on the songwriting program there, I'm sure it's great. And there's, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, everything at that school is, I mean, top of the line, really.
Yeah, can be.
Can be, yeah.
But, yeah, I just realized, I was like, I can't have anyone, like, tell me how to write a song. I already had kind of my own process and my own thing I was developing and figuring out. And I was like,
and then someone's going to tell you you're doing it wrong or something.
Exactly.
It's just like, dude, what are you talking about? Yeah, whatever works for me, man. Like, this is art. You can't tell me I'm doing something wrong in art.
Yeah. Yeah. And like one of my favorite bands was Modest Mouse.
Okay. Yeah.
And they have some of the most ambiguous lyrics ever. Mm-hmm. Like, what are they talking about? I kind of get it. Mm-hmm. And I loved that because I still connected with it. And, but yeah, so I didn't really know what I wanted to major in. It's my first time out of the house living on my own. And I was a real confident kid in high school. I had a lot of friends and when I got to college, that all just turned on its head. And I was like, whoa, like this, like very, you know, just very self-conscious, very socially anxious. And I was dealing with my first real heartbreak.
Yep.
You know, the first girl I ever fell in love with. That ended, you know, kind of while I was, you know, in my second semester maybe. And it was just...
You went to college with a girlfriend?
No, well, we were doing long distance for
tough.
A while.
That's
tough. And yeah, it definitely didn't work.
It almost never does.
And it was just, I don't know, too much for me. And I was learning a lot about the world at that time. I was learning a lot about myself.
Being in Berkeley, probably dropping acid a little too much.
I know. Well, I was doing it much before that.
True. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, and then, you know, I'd like to think I'm on a spiritual path. That's when, for me, the floodgates really opened up.
Right.
And I didn't know what to make of what, you know. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to process these things I was experiencing and feeling, and how connected I felt to, you know, another person all of a sudden, and just the nature of love and heartbreak And I was, you know, I was kind of like, you know, flunking out a lot of classes at the time. Still had to do a lot of liberal arts. And I just, I just want to be here doing music. But I didn't know what I wanted to do with music. So I moved back to Baltimore and started working out of a music school or a music store, giving lessons. And that was my first time doing that. And it was very rough at first. But
I can imagine.
And then I got my first regular gig there. I think I recorded an album back then. I don't know what happened to it, but I'm glad I don't know what happened
to it. Right, that type of thing. Yeah, I get that, dude. I have some films like that.
I got my first gig out of like a Persian restaurant that my friend owned. And then I was playing gigs, met this mandolin player and started doing some gigs with him. And then I kind of got my bearings back and decided to go back to Berkeley and finish it out.
Just,
you know, I had a clear path of what I wanted to do. I was playing a lot of jazz at the time. I told myself, we'll just go back and just study jazz guitar. And I guess like with any school that you go to, I mean, it's really much so there. Like you can study under so many different people and you really have to pick the right person for you and
it's not easy to do that. I'm aware that having gone to college myself is like it's you don't know the professors ahead of time. You don't know them until you have had them.
Yeah.
And then it's like by that point it's like, well, you're kind of stuck. At least in my situation I was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I experienced my first three semesters. It was just stagnant. I had like decent teachers, but like they were okay. But when I went back, had a clear path, and then found the people I wanted to study under, especially this one guy. His name was Jack Pazzanelli. I took like one class by him, and I knew I just had to keep studying with him.
Right.
Because I love the way he teaches. I love the way he played. He's kind of like player when he just starts playing. Your eyes kind of want to roll back into your head. And you just,
oh, wow.
And yeah, he had this weird grunt about him whenever he started playing. He'd get into like this really focused space, and he like whenever he played guitar, he'd be like, nah, 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 and he'd do this really that's low grumble. And whenever there was a new student in class, and they looked at him, they're like, "What is this guy nuts?" Like, no, you'll get it. He's the best.
This guy's the man. Just trust.
He played a lot with Jaco Pastorius in the day in Miami in the '70s, and then he was good friends with Joe Pass. Joe Pass is one of the best solo jazz guitar players.
Right.
So I was like, this is my guy. I'm going to study as much with him as I can. And I learned a lot. I learned a fuck ton.
That's awesome.
And, you know, straight A's, last five semesters on the dean's list. And, oh, nice.
Hell yeah, dude.
And it's just, I learned the difference of just having.
Hold on one second. We got something for that. We got a little soundboard with a couple of things.
God, I hope I earn another one later.
We'll keep track.
I think I just learned the importance of, you know, having a goal that is clear. And I teach a lot of guitar, you know, now. I've been probably teaching ever since, you know, I was 21, but
sure.
But really it's been my main job for the past 8 years or so. And a lot of kids that go off to college, and I just try to tell them, just try, you know, think about it early. I know it sucks trying to decide what you want to do for the rest of your life, but just try to have some kind of path,
you know,
try to figure out something within the parameter of school or with whatever you're doing, work, you know, ambitions. Just have, you know, little goals, I think, are really helpful. Because I think a lot of kids get to school and everything's just like, it's so open-ended. You're like, what do I want to do? And then you decide this thing last minute, and then you're stuck in this career path. And then you go and get, you know, go back to school and do this. And, I'm glad I went back, you know, because there was a chance I wasn't going to. I was living kind of like in a semi-trap house, and the edge of Baltimore City with some sketchy dudes.
Yeah.
And a lot of sketchy shit went on there, and that was another reason I was like, I gotta get the fuck back to school. Like, I can't end up down here with this.
Sure.
I
get that.
Yeah,
that's... it's tough when you... I mean, to speak on the picking a path thing. It's funny. I always kind of talk about how, you know, life is essentially just that, where it's just you're walking down a path in the forest, in the woods, where you're just like, and you come to forks in the road constantly of choices that you can make. And if you, the more that you make the wrong decision, the farther you get away from the place you're supposed to go.
Yep.
And that's tough, especially with college being like, you can't, like, if you decide halfway through a semester that you're like, oh, there's that, forgot about that thing. Decide halfway through a semester that you don't want to be in that major anymore, you just lose that semester. Because you can't decide that halfway through the semester. Yeah. You'd have to start, it's like, it doesn't work like that. So, dude, I hated college.
Yeah.
It was not for me.
But there's a lot of value in also having the strength to say, no, this is not working.
Right.
And restart.
Right. Yeah.
There's so much value in that.
No, absolutely.
Because I think you have a greater chance of ending up where you're supposed to be.
I think just even by continuing to persevere through things that are tough, you'll have a greater chance of where you're supposed to be, of ending up where you're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, next question I had for you. How did the name your band's name, Bear Hat?
Oh,
how did that name come around?
You're too fucking tired of trying to figure out a name. No, I wanted to call it Skunk Hat originally.
Okay.
It's because I feel like there's, I don't know, it's connotation, right? Where there's little...
Sure,
you
yeah.
can, like, you know, piece something together for what that might mean. I don't know. And no one likes Skunk Hat. And the first time we brought our bass player into rehearsal, he could see that we've been fucking just frustrated over this for a long time.
Right.
And he's like, why don't we just call it Bear Hat? I got a bear hat back at my house. He's like, actually, I got a whole bear skin with the head and you can wear it as a hat. And I said, okay, let's just go with that. That sounds
fucking,
you know, weird. And it rings a little better than Skunk Hat.
It does ring better than, yeah.
And yeah, it's more fun to say. And, you know, there's so many so-and-so string band, blah, 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 blue guy, I don't know, mountain string band.
Right.
But...
yeah.
So I just want to, it kind of evokes a neat kind of imagery in a way, and it's kind of fun, and
I agree.
And it doesn't, I like that it doesn't have to mean something.
Well,
you
yeah.
know, just let's show up and listen to the music. You'll get what we mean.
That's why I asked the name, the question, how did that come about, rather than what does that mean?
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't mean shit. Yeah, sorry. It probably doesn't mean shit. It's just a funny story, I'm sure, behind it. So, yeah, that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So another thing that we talk about on this podcast is kind of like, you know, art as a whole, which is one of the main reasons we wanted to have you on, is what do you think it is that makes you create, and why is music your medium?
I think what makes me create is just a need to express.
Mm-hmm.
We have so many interactions with so many different people that bring different things, different parts of us out. It can be hard to find your center at times and to really... in a way, even have proof that you feel this way underneath all of it. And music was proof. It was me connecting with, you can call it like your higher self or whatever. It was kind of, to me, it was like, okay, it's proof that this is kind of where I am right now, you know, and it's also just a way to process, and if I need to figure out something too, I need to get something out, and it's a good vehicle to figure that out.
Right.
And,
absolutely.
And you know, when I was like 15, 16, I used to just go into the woods and play guitar and like sing to the birds. And there's something
I know what that's like.
Really profound when that happens, when you connect like with the woods and you feel like you're a part of the sound system there, and there's almost this call and response thing that can happen sometimes.
Sure.
And
that's really cool.
And through that, I think it was the first, through that, it's, you know, there can be this kind of greater thing that speaks through you. You know, you call it a channel, but we're just, I think when that happened for the first time, it totally like shocked my worldview in a way, because I was like, that didn't come, you know, from me. I don't think so. You know, I didn't even. And I think that's, I guess, the main reason I probably do music, the less egotistical reason I do music. But,
sure.
And I try not to lose sight of that. But I think that's the greatest part of it. But I guess, like I said, it's a way to process, you know, if I'm, I've written so many fucking breakup songs, I can't write another one, but, but it was good for the time, you know, because I needed proof that I was feeling this way.
Right. Yeah.
And it's almost like therapy, right? I guess that's what a therapist is. It's, you get it out, it's real, and it's not just in your head. And music can do the same thing. So it's therapy.
Nice.
It's mainly therapy, I guess. I don't write songs for other people. I write them for me because I need it.
Right. Yeah.
And I think the best art is that, because we're all so similar, that someone's going to relate to that and is going to appreciate it. And anytime I've tried to write a song for somebody or with the idea of like, okay, this is going to be
right
for all these, they're going to come and listen to the song. Like, it's just never, it's always stale and there's something missing. And the art is just so powerful, right? It's expressive. It connects us, right? Because of that, people can relate to it. Music, especially, because when you're in at a show and music has the ability to bring everyone on the same wavelength. And that's what we're doing all the time, right? When we're going out, we're going to a party, it's just, we all come from these separate wavelengths and we can kind of realize, I think we're always on the same, but we don't realize it. And that allows us to really...
Frequency.
When I was, 18, went to my first music festival, All Good Music Festival in West Virginia.
Oh, yeah.
I've really started to realize that, how connected people are. And
that's cool, man.
Yeah. And I was just like, and that's where I really understood. I'm like, God, I'm glad I decided to do this, because there's so much to learn here.
Right.
And there's still so much to learn.
Yeah.
And it's something I'm going to be doing the rest of my life, just because there's no end to that in one life.
That's dope, man. I'm glad that you feel that way about that, because, I mean, number one, I've heard you play, and you should be doing that for the rest of your life. And then also, it's just good to see that people pick that. It's good to hear someone that's, someone pick art, and that it's not like it's not just some. It's like you picked art because you didn't have anything else, or because there's probably a lot of those.
I could have done a bunch of things. You could have done,
I'm sure, you know, but that's not what I'm making. I'm trying to say, at least you picked art because that was what you wanted to come out of you, and I feel like there's so many reasons people pick. I mean, I went to school for not music, but for film. And there were a bunch of people in that film school that were just there because they didn't have anything else that and it was just something that they could be in to get the degree. And who knows what those people end up doing. I hope they end up doing something. I hope the best for these people.
Yeah. But, well, I think, that's what's good about art. People do it because they love it, most of the time.
Right, that is true.
And
there's so many things you can do with it too.
Yeah, and my father, he was like, "You're alive today. You might as well have a good time."
Hell yeah.
And
my dad said something like that to me recently too.
When I was a kid, I just wanted to be a pro skater. And then when I started, hurting my body too much, messed up my ankle, messed up my knee.
And
it really set me back, which was really frustrating at the time. I came to peace with it eventually and just realized I can't keep pursuing this path. And luckily, I played a lot of guitar ever since I was 12, and I loved music. And I guess that was just ingrained in me already. I'm grateful that I had hobbies that I truly loved. There's such a benefit in that. It's such a good vehicle to learn about yourself and to grow as a person and to build confidence. Maybe not always the right kind of confidence.
I could go on and on about that. Yeah, no, it's God bless anybody that has the gumption and the confidence to go up and sing in front of everybody. Because I've done it many times. It's not, and you do it professionally. It's not easy to do that. There is a lot of, for lack of a better term, nerves that go on. It's a lot of feelings that you're going on with it, but it's God bless anybody that can go get up and do it, but not everybody should go get up and do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I like to say about musicians, the really good ones, we're all nerds. I don't know if I'm a really good one yet, but, a lot of artists too are just very, introverted
thinking,
kind of nerdy,
constantly thinking.
Yeah, and people that are you think about anybody who's really like the best at their craft, like Michael Jordan and a lot of really good musicians. They gain confidence through this thing that they do, and and maybe not confidence where it's needed in the right place, right? So if you're not good at interacting with people or connecting with people, but you think you're all that just because you learned how to play the fucking guitar, or you, you know.
I think we all know at least one of those guys.
Yeah. And, you know, I watched that Michael Jordan documentary, and he was, he's a weird dude. But I guess you have to be, in a way, to be the best. But music, it's about connecting with people. Right. So there is this great equalizer that eventually happens with musicians, where they're forced to face themselves after years and years and years of getting good and building this, what I think is a bit of false confidence in, in themselves. And they realize, oh, I need to figure out how to be around people. I need to figure out how to, and it's beautiful when that happens. And then they get real humbled all of a sudden. And,
That's interesting. That,
and I'm a super high strung, anxious person, especially after I was like 21. And you know, I still get nervous, you know, especially for the bigger shows. I still get nervous in social situations, but I've been that way for so long. I'm kind of at peace with it.
Right.
You know, I'm just like, this is just me. This is just whatever. I'm going to be this way. I'm working on it. You know, been in therapy for years. You know, quit a lot of drugs and
doing what I can.
You know, I've really,
just, you know, still figuring it out.
The hippies call it, done a lot of shadow work.
Right. Actually,
yeah, but I faced a lot of shit and
I get that.
For a long time. But performing in front of people, big crowds, you know, just learning how to talk to a big group of people and being comfortable with that has taught me a lot, and it's helped me grow a lot on my path.
Right.
I've really come out, you know, of my shell a lot. I guess especially in the past like 4 or 5 years, and I attribute a lot of that just to performing. You know, when I was first starting to perform in Colorado, I don't know, 5, 6 years ago, before every show and even during every show, it was just like, it's like bombs going off in my head constantly. Like, and it's hard to really even talk to anybody in between songs or do anything. Sure. And then,
you're just getting in to get out. You play your song and get out. Yeah.
And yeah, that's when I, you know, I was drinking a lot just to cope.
Yep.
You know, with that, you know, doing a lot of coke.
How long ago did you quit drinking?
It's been 4 years.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, dude.
No plans on going back.
Hell yeah, dude. I just got two pretty recently. Yeah. And, I feel the same way. Yeah. I told myself I was going to reevaluate it 2 years and be like, do I want to go back? And I was just like, no, my life is so much better without that shit. Like,
congrats.
Congrats to you too, man. Thank you. Hold on, we'll do one more. Hold on.
We both got one.
But yeah, man. Well, that's awesome. That's, I mean, you always hope when you see people that are like, I mean, I'm speaking to like people that are, you know, either have struggled in the past and have, you know, made something for themselves in the future, whether it just be like getting off the shit, you know, it's people that make a change in their lives because they want something better for themselves. I mean, those are the people that, you know, will succeed. Yeah.
And rarely do we ever just say one day I'm going to change. It's usually after a bunch of shit and a bunch of mistakes, and you lose some of the best things you ever had, and then you decide, okay, I can't keep doing this.
Yep. Gotta hit that rock bottom for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Not everyone does, but.
Yeah. I quit coke like a year before I quit drinking.
Hold on, wait, we gotta get this one done.
Yeah, a year before I quit drinking, and
yeah.
And it just, I got to a point where none of the drugs worked anymore. I got to such an anxious, like, revolving negative door, Nothing worked. It didn't. It almost made it worse, because then you're fighting this. This dissonance between my body feeling good and my mind being like in the gutter, and and it's just this perpetual machine where you get nowhere. And
well, I remember doing cocaine at like 10:30 at night and being like, this will make me feel better, than being up at fucking 2 in the morning still feeling as shitty as I felt at 10:30 at night, and being just like, what the fuck did I do to myself? And like, what is wrong with me? You know, like,
But you know, I think, you know, in a way, I almost hope, like, if that's the path you're on or anyone's on, I hope you get to a point where nothing fucking works anymore.
Yeah, that's where you want to get, because then you quit.
Then, yeah, it's like,
you don't want to be on the shit.
All right, I got to figure it out now.
Yeah, drugs are fun and all. Like, the harmless, the relatively harmless ones are fine. I don't know. It's, and also, anything in moderation, I think, is relatively fine as it is.
Yeah, I mean, I still, you know, have my vices that I still struggle with. You know, nicotine, weed.
Yep.
You know, I don't smoke it anymore, but the edibles.
And, sure, yeah.
And kratom, you know. Very, very grateful for kratom, but...
Yeah, I would agree with you there. That's a tough one for... Because it is an addictive chemical.
Yeah.
The metrogenine and 7-hydroxy especially is addictive. But goddamn, it's like... I haven't touched alcohol in 2 years because I've been on the kratom. I've had a couple surgeries on my shoulder, and I have a fucked up back. I don't really feel that anymore because of the red kratom.
Yeah.
Just like, it's stuff like that. It's just like, they're, the cost of it, the benefits outweigh the cost.
Yeah, for me, they do, for sure. As hard as it is getting off of that.
It's really tough, dude. It sucks.
I've been weaning off the past, you know, I ebb and flow with that stuff, but I've been weaning off the past couple of weeks, and it's a little brutal, but.
Yeah, it's tough.
Like, it's nothing like alcohol or cocaine for me. And it's not something that's going to incapacitate you or, you know, cause you to black out. And,
You know, it's just going to maybe make you throw up, because I think your body rejects it at a certain point.
You just, you'll vomit before you feel that good. It's just, it helps, you know, I'm around, I'm in bars all the time. I'm around drunk people all the time. And that's kind of something that can help. Just
and probably drunk keep, people keep that want to like drink with you.
Yeah, so that was kind of a big reason I quit, though, too. I mean, one of the reasons, I guess. Being a performer, it's really hard to keep a healthy drinking habit.
Yep.
Especially if you're doing, people like what you're doing. Hey, buddy, let me buy you another beer. Man, you want another beer? And I'm like, I can't stop drinking once I start. I'm like, yeah, of course
I
do. And I was just... You know, driving drunk home from gigs too much, and and I was like, this is not gonna end good. I was staring, because at this point I know this is gonna be a career for me at some point, and it is now, and I don't know if I can call it, maybe I'll be making enough money one day but I was looking down the barrel of this long life of playing music, and I was like, there's no way. I have such a horrible track record already. There's no way this is gonna end good. And And so, in the same token, it also made it a little even more difficult to quit at first, because I'm in bars. You know, imagine quitting alcohol, but you have to go play music in a bar weekend.
When I quit drinking, I was doing comedy, and here in town, and I had to quit doing that because I was just like, I can't be here.
Yeah.
And I just quit doing comedy, because I was like, I'd rather quit both of these things than not quit either one, because I don't think I'm going to be able to quit one without the other. You know, so I get that. That's cool.
You've been back in it though, right?
Comedy?
Yeah.
I've done it a few times since then. Not so much. I kind of passed on to filmmaking and trying to do stuff like that. And I would love to, like, at this point we're making films. We just finished one I've talked about a bunch on the podcast, Night Cook. I want to make like a Monty Python style films.
Sweet.
I think that'd be so funny.
Yeah.
I think I could
need
do
something
that.
Lighthearted.
Something lighthearted and something ridiculous.
This
and like
too much.
Dude, straight up. And everyone's films are now either like way too intense, or they're like way over the top. Like they're either like way too intense murder type stuff, which I can't really do violence on. I got stabbed a few years back in a fight, so I like violence is like Like, I feel it like viscerally. Yeah. And so I'm like watching it on a movie. Mm-hmm. But it's like I feel like I need something lighthearted most of the time if I want to watch something.
Yeah.
And I can do it every now and then. I have to be in the right mood to watch like something like that is going to be even an action movie. Like it's tough, but I've gotten better at it over the years.
Comedy is one of the most healing
things. The most healing thing ever, dude. It's
one of the most important art forms we have, I think.
I would agree.
Because it has an ability to speak truth to power, right? In a way that, I mean, music can do that, but comedy, I just, you know.
Yeah.
I think comedy is really good for that. And
And
bringing different kinds of people together just to laugh at some bullshit.
Well, because it doesn't matter who the person is that's telling the joke in like stand up at least. Like it just matters if the joke is funny. That's what Rogan always is talking about on his podcast. Like it's like something along the lines of if laughs are the currency. Like it's like if you can make everybody laugh, then like you can fit in there at their spots. And it's like that's kind of how I feel with kind of art. It's like creation is the currency.
Yeah.
And it's like, I feel like the people that I want to have around me and the people that I wanted to like work with myself are ones that are like, I want to see that like people are doing stuff themselves too. Cause like I spent a lot of time just saying I'm doing stuff and then realizing like, oh, you're not doing anything. You're just high on ketamine. And just like that, there's a couple of years like that.
But you feel like you're feel figuring like shit out.
You feel like you got. Well, I would say that the ketamine helped tremendously from the whole.
Me too.
Tremendous help. But at the same time, you can get lost in that place.
Any drugs, a double-edged sword.
Yep.
There is no magic pill. Like it's about, it is about the dose and timing and, everyone is. With the 7-hydroxy pills that are coming out, dude. Everyone speaks, oh God, everyone's going to get so addicted to this. And yeah, people will. And sure. It is going to be bad for a lot of people, but it's a lot better than fentanyl. It's a lot better than heroin.
Can you overdose on that stuff?
I don't think so.
I don't think you can either. I think it just feels like the morphine.
It doesn't affect respiratory.
Interesting.
And
sorry to interrupt you, but I agree with you there because that's I hadn't thought about that because I had been thinking like this is bad, the 7-hydroxy shit, because it really is like a drug.
Yeah, people are gonna get addicted to that, and it's probably gonna ruin some fucking things. But
it's better than fentanyl.
Yeah, I'd rather all the homeless and all the fentanyl and. Opiate addicts, I'd rather that be going around everywhere than this shit. And with a lot of this, you just, like we said earlier, you have to look at what's the lesser evil here. And
I agree. Well, the whole podcast is addiction based, but we always say it's neither of us, Jay or I, are sober.
It's
harm reduction.
Exactly.
This is about doing what works for the person that is in charge of their body. It's about doing what works for them so that they don't kill themselves.
Yeah.
That's basically the basic of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, when it comes down to it.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Well, I got a question for you here that I wanted to... I wrote this one down. I wanted to ask this one. And you may not have an answer to this one. That's okay. What is the first song that you remember hearing?
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the first time I fell in love with music.
Sweet.
And the first time I processed what music was.
Right.
I think I was like 6 or 7. I was riding in the back seat of my mom's car and on cassette tape.
Yep.
We had Backstreet Boys.
Second
album. And it was the first time I remember hearing music.
You're what, like 29, 30? Somewhere around there?
33.
33, okay. Yeah. Right on that. Still same. We'd have been in high school at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's that time period, man. Yeah, that's exactly what would have been on, dude. That's hilarious.
Yeah, man.
My
first CD was like Britney Spears. My grandmother got it for me for Christmas.
And, nice.
I wasn't into that as the Backstreet Boys, but was still into it. but yeah, when I was sitting in the back of my mom's car and we were driving away from my house, I remember being like, oh, there's this thing making that sound. It's the guitar, and then they're singing.
Nice.
Oh, and that... that's the drums doing that. And I was able to hone in on different parts of a song for the first time.
Interesting.
And it completely blew my mind for some reason.
It's impressive. It's impressive to be able to do as a six-year-old to hone in on that, because you don't really... It's... When you think about music, it's like it is individual frequencies that combine into one frequency that projects out.
Yeah.
So to be able to hone in on the individual frequency... I don't know. If I was, you know, your parent, you said... And you were telling me, like, yeah, like, you know, like the guitar makes, and you're six, I'd be like, you know, I'd be like, what the fuck is going on with this? Okay, sick. Like, yeah. He's going to be like, like, you know, like, because yeah. That's, you know, I was probably 22 the first time I did that. Mm-hmm. Like honing in on the individual instruments. Mm-hmm. I think it was the Grateful Dead that did that.
Nice.
Because it was like, you know, I was probably on acid or something, yeah. Just like, what?
That's about the age I learned about the Grateful Dead, too.
Yeah,
I didn't even know who the Dead were until, honestly, even through high school, I didn't know anything about the Grateful Dead.
I didn't really know much. I grew up in California, so it's a little, it's kind of, I mean, you know, you're in Berkeley, it's there, yeah. It's yeah. There, it's the spirit's
yeah.
Still there.
Yeah, when I got to college, that's where I met my first Deadhead friends,
yep.
And it's also where I smoked my first dab.
Oh, dude,
and, yeah. Yeah, my first dab, I was listening to the Dead with yep. My friend at the time, he had dreads down to here,
mm-hmm.
And was like giving me the rundown, like...
This is how you smoke it like crack.
That's
like,
what Jerry sounds like, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But no, those were the dabs that
the dabs thing.
He made it himself. Like right in front of me. That's when he would stuff a glass tube full of weed, and then he'd just take a butane can and just squeeze it and blow it through the weed, and that on the other side of the tube came like this black.
Yeah.
Tarry,
yeah,
dab.
That's the worst.
Oh, it was awesome.
Yeah, well, you get so stoned off that. You get so stoned off that shit, but it's so like that shit's so dangerous. You can blow up shit doing that.
Yeah,
like that's crazy. Like we had a lot of that shit going around before. Well, when we were smoking weed before we turned 18, as soon as we all turned 18, it was game over. We just were all at the dispensaries getting the highest grade shit that we could find, and it was just like we were baked out of our minds. But it was before that. It was like. Yeah, so-and-so's got, like, a fucking dab that it was exactly, like, made like that. Like, that he blew butane through, and it's just, like, and we'd do it, and we'd just be, like, just, like, so high.
Yeah, that's when they had the metal nails.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, dude, do they not make those anymore?
I mean, I haven't seen them, like, you know, the metal, nail with, like, a hole in the middle. Right? Yeah. I haven't seen one since 10 years.
Since then, at least, like, yeah. I like I had a health stone. Do you ever have one of those?
Mm-mm.
It's like you put it on the top of a bong. It's a female piece. So you like put the top of it suctions onto the top type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a volcanic rock in the top. And so you put like a dab on top of it and then you just blast it with a torch.
Oh.
And it fucking, it's immediately incinerates the whole thing. And I wrecked instantly every time. It was fantastic. And then, health stone is, I think, what they were called, and they're great. I had a couple of different ones of those. I lit my hair on fire a few different times, going like this with the torch over top of it.
We didn't know the benefit of a low temp dab.
No, I didn't know that one yet. I hadn't figured that one out yet. Someone eventually told me about that, and I was like, I don't know. I think I like it. I think I like when my lungs burn.
Uh-huh.
It's like, fuck, dude, you're an idiot. How about what are your biggest musical influences? I'll say past and present, meaning past as in, you know, back in the day, present as in now.
Past, like I said, I loved Modest Mouse's songwriting.
Okay.
And just, that's a band I fell in love with twice. Once when I was in high school, I loved the music. It was different than anything. And then when I think, later in college, really fell in love with them again because of the lyricism, because I think I had experienced more in life and could understand these ambiguous lyrics a bit more and relate to what they were saying. And I was like, wow, that's some powerful shit.
You
know?
Yeah.
And no, because I had really no one in my life to explain to me what I was feeling in this interconnectedness and these synchronicities that you experience that we all do. And music was something that explained that. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm not going fucking crazy. Like,
right.
That, like, other...
This
like,
is the, a thing in the world.
Yeah, this is a part of life that I was just never told about, and really kind of had to figure out for myself. And so Modest Mouse. I listened to a lot of music back then. I liked a lot of like singer songwriters. I listened to Jack Johnson, but I wouldn't say he's like a main influence. I loved Hendrix, man. I always loved Hendrix to death.
Yeah, I've got that up there.
Still, he's one of my top three favorite guitar players.
Absolutely.
You know, just there's like
there's nothing else like it.
Man, ever since, God, like people are just trying to emulate him, dude.
Well, that's I always refer to him as the god of guitar. Yeah,
he is.
You know, he's the one that everybody looks up to. Like, I want to be like, you know, that's Jimmy.
Like Machine Gun.
That's one of my favorite guitar songs of all time.
That
song's a wild song too, especially because I think that was that's on the Band of Gypsies album, isn't it?
I think so.
And so it's like that's like 1970, right in the middle of Vietnam War, and it's just he's just like fuck, and that you can hear it in the song, like it's about the war, definitely about the war. Yeah. It's like, dude, that's such a power. Like people don't quite do the same thing anymore with the people are kind of afraid to speak out. It feels like, and I mean, I guess. Jimmy probably should have been a radio speaker because they kind of killed him, but
it was sketchy.
but
I think that's all I can think of for past influences. I like Modest Yahoo. I like that.
Okay.
I liked Trevor Hall when I was in high school.
I feel like that's familiar.
He lives in Boulder now, actually.
Oh,
but it's real like hippie kind of. It's a lot of Eastern, like Indian influences in that music.
Yeah.
But it's like, I'm going to say it's poppy, but it's very accessible. You know?
Sure.
I love Trevor Hall in high school. And
I feel like I had heard of it, but I can't put a name on it.
Yeah, again, it's like music all about spirituality.
Sure.
And I, you know, was raised Christian, not hardcore, you know, but non-denominational. And
I can relate to that.
And then when I was 15, I just started, you know, seeing other people, and even then, just pieced it together. I'm like,
something's
you can't say cool. that we're right and everybody else is wrong with this. Like,
straight
it just,
up.
I just like they're and they're saying the same thing. You know, it's like all these religions, like this is the one, and the whole, and I just got real turned off by Christianity, and you know, probably right after I started smoking weed, you know, real like. Introspective and philosophical about the world, and I think, you know, Trevor Hall's music was, you know, something that helped me at the time. Not super into it these days. But I have a lot of respect for that, and I liked a band called Explosions in the Sky. Have you ever heard of them?
I have heard of them. I don't know why though.
Yeah, when I was in high school, I loved Explosions.
What kind of music is that?
It's an electric band, usually not distorted guitar. It's usually pretty clean electric guitar, and and it's all instrumental. And
okay, I feel like I have heard that.
Yeah, name. Have you seen Friday Night Lights?
Yeah,
yeah. So they did a lot of the music to that soundtrack.
Gotcha. Okay, the film or the show?
I think the show. Okay. I know I've never seen it. I just know that that's how people can know them. But it's just really epic, beautiful, emotional. Music and
to check that out.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. I think even in my guitar ensemble, I think my 11th grade year we did an Explosions.
Oh, nice.
In the Sky, yeah. Your Hand in Mine, that's probably their most known song. It's a great thing to listen to before you're going to bed or if you're about to have sex. Late sex.
Right, late sex. Don't do it in the middle of the day.
Yeah, you gotta put on one of the other songs before that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
that's funny.
But yeah, I like that kind of stuff, and then more recent. Who do I like? I don't even know. I really take it from a lot of different places.
Sure.
You know, guitar wise, I really got into gypsy jazz for a little bit in college. Django Reinhardt, he's like the godfather of gypsy jazz.
Okay.
He's a French guy. From like the 40s, and he only had two working fingers, and he developed this style of guitar, and it's gypsy jazz is acoustic guitar. Usually it's also known as hot club jazz. There's usually a guitar, a violin, maybe a clarinet at times, but It's this very like, I don't know, I love that I've stuff. I still do. And even in Bear Hat, we kind of hint at gypsy just a little bit.
Well, you guys got that. Is it a clarinet that you guys have, or is it
flute?
Flute. Right, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Flute. Yeah. Yeah. That adds like such an interesting vibe to it.
Yeah. He really does.
Yeah.
And these days, who do I listen to? A lot of songwriters.
Yeah.
I really like Benjamin Todd.
I love Benjamin Todd. I got the Lost Dog. I got that.
Hey, there he is.
I saw them out in. At where was that? It was in Austin, Texas when I used to live out there. It was at O4 Center. I lived like right down the street from there, and they I walked to that show. Cool. It's fucking awesome, cool. Dude. Yeah, they're great.
You know, I love Tyler Childers.
Yep.
Early Tyler Childers.
Yeah.
He's doing I heard Rick Rubin's producing his next record though.
So I'll listen to it.
Yeah, like, well, like if there's anyone that can
get him on the right track.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's that guy. So, or he just needs to get his heart broken again or something. Sure, that dude at 22 wrote some of the most
insane songs ever. God. Insane country music songs of all time. Man. Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't even know I liked country music, right? Because we grew up with like Keith Urban, like
it's pop country shit.
I don't want to say Keith Urban shit.
I don't want to say anybody's shit. I just want to say
I hate the genre of pop country. Yeah. And then when this new wave of more like I guess authentic country, and I was like, oh, I love this stuff.
Yeah, that's how I feel too.
I really love this, and you know, I coming out of college was doing a lot of funk and jazz.
Oh, nice.
You know, like if you listen to them, I do have my first album on Spotify. It's called Fate. It's pretty funky. And,
I've listened
and
to that.
It's all electric and and then after that, really just got more into bluegrass and the folk kind of Americana country. Because I always had this kind of naturally deeper voice, and I just like when I got to a certain age, I was like, fuck it, I'm just gonna sing stuff that's comfortable. I'm not gonna try to sing, I'm just gonna
be it. Well, that one comes out of you, come out.
Yeah. So it's been this path to authenticity, I think, for me after that point. And other bands that I really like.
Do you guys have, speaking of, you know, having your first album on Spotify, do you guys have any plans for a studio album?
So, yeah, I'm glad you said that.
Sick.
Tomorrow.
Oh, no shit.
Our first song from the album is dropping on Spotify and all the platforms.
Yeah.
All
right.
Please give it a listen.
If it's all right with you, I'll probably link it in this episode because this won't come out until after that's dropped. So that's perfect.
Please do.
Yeah, absolutely. What's it called?
The song's called Old 99.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Like an old 99 car.
Hell yeah, dude. That's sick. Yeah. Hell yeah, dude. Yeah. That's awesome. That's so fucking perfect timing.
Yeah.
We didn't mean to do that.
I know. Yeah, it happens. Thank you.
Yeah, right. For real. That's hilarious.
But yeah, I know. It's hard to pin down modern influences. I really don't have a band or an artist that I'm like super into, and even Tyler and like Benjamin Todd, they're just one of the dudes that I can think of right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many good ones out that it's just like, I mean, and also on the same fact of you're, you know, among creating it, so it's just like it's tough to like pin down other people that you find influence from here in the same general sphere of like you're creating music at the same time.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
One band that I learned about in the past year that I'm really into is Pert Near Sandstone. They're like a bluegrass band from the Midwest.
I'll have to check them out.
They're like very, they remind me a lot of our band, you know?
Oh, nice.
We already had our thing going, and then I found out about this band. I was like, oh, that's a good, you know.
That's a good band to tour with, though.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Maybe, dude. Yeah, they're pretty big.
Yeah, sure. you never know.
Yeah, yeah.
You never know. That'd be pretty sick.
Yeah.
Put it out there in the world. Maybe it'll happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Another question for you. What's your favorite venue you've played?
Oh, before we get to that,
yes.
One other guitar player I want to say that I really fell in love with in college and still am totally in love with is Grant Green.
Okay.
Grant Green, he is like a jazz player from 60s, 70s.
Sure.
And he does jazz, but he also is very bluesy. So it's very accessible, you know. Some jazz is really hard, hard to listen to because it's just so dense.
Yeah.
And he is someone that I think is easy to listen to and well, that's super cool. Tasteful. Grant Green.
Yeah. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah. Sorry.
No worries. Favorite venue you've played?
Ooh, definitely up in Gold Hill.
Okay.
We love Gold Hill.
Gold Mill or whatever. Yeah.
Gold Hill Inn.
Gold Hill Inn. That's right. Yeah.
So it's split between the Gold Hill Inn and the Gold Hill Store, there's only like one block that's like the main street of Gold Hill.
Right.
And those are the two main things there.
That's funny.
But after COVID, and after I got out of like a pretty serious relationship and was trying to figure it out again,
mm-hmm.
I discovered the Gold Hill Store, and I don't remember how I discovered it, but started playing music up there, and they were really supportive of me and just let me play shows whenever I wanted to up there. They were kind of starting to have music there and starting to make a thing of it. And I'm grateful that I felt like I could be a part of that.
That's cool.
Now that like everybody wants to play at the store, dude. It's like,
and you're like ingrained in there. That's dope.
And became pretty good friends with the owner. Shout out to Mike.
Shout out Mike.
Yeah, Mike's the best.
That's dope.
And up there, just really started to feel just embraced by the community and. You know, really learned what it, you know, got a glimpse of what it's like to be in a small town community, especially those mountain towns. People really, they rely on one another for things.
Oh, you know?
And everyone up there, a lot of people play music, and it was just, I was like, oh, man. It was a time in my life I really needed something like that. And I still play there all the time. And I'd say, yeah, I'm just super grateful for the store and everything they've done. And if you're ever up in Gold Hill, please go to the Gold Hill Store and eat one of their cookies because they're the best. So I've heard. I can't eat one because I have a dairy thing. But it's just like a little pub, you know, and general store. So it's like where people that's in town dope. Can go and get little things if they need too. It. And everyone that works there is fucking amazing. And we've just had, yeah.
That's
yeah.
awesome, man. We'll have to make it up there sometime. Yeah.
And then our band has played for the past couple years at the Gold Hill Inn.
Right.
Which is really historic at this point. Really well known for having some of the best Americana and bluegrass music in the country.
Right.
Some of the biggest names in bluegrass will make sure that they stop up there at the Gold Hill Inn when they're in town.
Interesting.
They're playing bigger shows in Denver. Or there's people that will travel from out of state just to play at the Gold Hill Inn. When you go in there, it's this old building, these wood floors that feel like they're over 100 years old.
Yeah.
When you dance on them, it's like just you can just feel the whole floor shaking. It's
yeah.
Great.
That's
bring your boots up there.
Yeah.
And you know when you play there, there's all these pictures of people from decades ago, and you know I'm blanking on the name right now. I'll think about it later.
No worries.
Yeah, but there's just like some of the most famous bluegrass people from like all time. Just photos of them that are signed.
And, that's great. That's the best. I love
John Hartford. Places. That's the name. Okay. I'm thinking of. Yeah. He's got a signed photo right behind the stage with him in a banjo. And
hell yeah.
It's been under the same.
That's so cool. Dude.
Yeah, the same ownership for the past 60 years. It's stayed in the same family. So I guess the sons own it now and have been running it for a long time. Shout out to Brian at the Gold Hill Inn.
Nice.
He's been super great to us. They've been super great to us, and we love playing there, and they love having us. And
That's awesome. It's
just we're a mountain band. Yeah,
that's great.
We're an acoustic mountain band. We love our playing in the mountains is our favorite. Playing for the mountain communities is definitely our favorite. Those people know how to fucking live, man.
Yeah,
they know how to dance, and they know music, and when you play. When you play for an audience that, I guess, really knows music or just knows life in general, right?
Mm-hmm.
The music takes on a whole nother life of its own, and it forces you to play better, forces you to want to be there more. It's just this, It's just mutually beneficial for everybody, I guess. I don't know. That's probably the wrong way of putting it. But
win-win-win.
It's a win-win-win. Yeah. And so those are the places we love playing. And
that's great.
Yeah. So stop into the Gold Hill Inn. They have some of the best food ever.
Yeah.
They do like 4-course meals there for really affordable. I think they're like under $50. I don't know.
Four course meal for that?
Yeah. Don't hold me to that.
Sure.
I guess in the 60s. But I've had the best steak of my life at the Gold Hill Inn. And we'll be playing there on August 8th.
Okay.
And then I'm actually doing a solo show there, my first solo gig at the Gold Hill Inn, which is a huge honor.
That's awesome.
I'll be there November 22nd.
November 22nd. Yeah. Okay. I'll try to make both those shows if we can. Yeah. My girlfriend and I were going up to Bozeman on. We're leaving on the 10th of August to go up to Yellowstone and Bozeman. We're going to see Billy Strings up in Bozeman on the 15th in August. So we might actually be able to make that work because it'll probably be. I don't think that's too terribly. It's kind of near Boulder, right, Gold Hill?
Yeah, it's just 20 to 40 minutes from Boulder, depending on the way you take.
Yeah, I mean, we'll try to make that. That'd be great.
Yeah. Please do, man. It's just such a. Whenever I stroll up to Gold Hill and I just open up my car door, I'm like, all of a sudden, like,
yeah,
just can breathe easier and I'm just like at peace. And I'm like, eventually one day I'm going to end up in a mountain town. I fucking better. Teaching in Boulder, I'm teaching most nights of the week and, and it's just, I don't know, it kind of be a pain in the ass having to go back and forth.
Sure.
But yeah, that's, I'm gearing up for it one day. Yeah.
Well, that'd be great. Well, I got a couple more questions for you, and we'll get you out of here. And this is another one of those that you may not be able to, off the top of your head, think of, but who knows? What is the best advice you've ever been given, musically or otherwise?
Musically is just to listen. Make sure you're listening and that you're not like, I guess that goes with life, too.
Just paying attention.
Yeah.
Make sure you're paying attention.
Yeah. I think Herbie Hancock said that thing, right? You don't learn how to play like somebody else. Learn how to play like yourself.
Yeah.
And I loved hearing that just because I always had trouble learning other people's licks and lines. I just felt like I didn't enjoy it ever.
Right.
Finding my own path to music gaining little bits of information from another player and maybe being like, oh, that's I could incorporate that, I can incorporate this, rather than like learning how to play like somebody.
Right.
And I guess that goes with life too. And
art in general too.
Yeah. There's so many times, right, when we have something to say, that's all we can think of and we miss everything else that's really going on around us.
Yeah, I gotta always tell myself, you gotta shut up, Andrew.
I think you're a good listener, man.
Thanks. I appreciate that. I've been trying very hard at that today. Well, let's see. What was the last one going to be? It was, where can people find your music and what you're doing?
Yeah. I have that album I did during COVID. Mm-hmm. It's Charlie White. The album's called Fate. I don't know. I don't play a lot of that kind of stuff anymore. Sure. Some of those songs I still bring out every now and then.
Well, I remember I've listened to that album a couple of times. I really like the Goodness Gracious song. Yeah. I've told you that a couple times. I love that song.
Yeah. I'm proud of it.
That's a good song.
It's the first work I've ever done that I'm truly proud of.
That's great, man.
And there's some things on there that are still really cringy for me to listen to. But
that's with anything.
You know, I've been so far removed from it. I actually listened to it the other night in my car, some of it, first time in like, I don't know, maybe years. and I have been able to step back from it and have less judgment towards it. I'm like, oh, this was good.
That's great.
I like this.
That's great, man.
But yeah, the band... you can go to bearhatmusic.com.
Okay.
We have a lot of videos up of our songs.
Okay.
And we're working on our first album. We're recording it ourselves. We have two that are done. The first one's coming out tomorrow. The next one is going to come out a week after tomorrow.
Okay.
Hopefully, if I don't drop the ball. and I think those are two kind of contrasty songs that give you an idea what we're about.
Great.
But yeah, Bear Hat, we just like to have a good time. All those dudes are my brothers, man. They've been my main support system and best friends for the past couple of years, and I'm just super grateful for them. I look up to a lot of them a lot. And yeah, so it's really music for the right reasons. We're just really good friends who love making music and love sharing that, and we try to get people dancing, man. We try to have a good time, and yeah, that's just why we're doing it.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Well, I greatly appreciate you doing this podcast. It's you know, it's an honor for even me to have you on. It's you know, I mean, I remember we had met at That's Kava, just, and you were playing that night, but I didn't know it was you that was playing. And then you went up and played. I was like, oh shit, like, you know, one of those moments where you're like, oh fuck, this kid's like really good. And then, you know, over time. So I'm glad we've you know, become friends at least somewhat. You know, yeah, it's pretty cool. And I'm looking forward to seeing what you do, because I think you can do some pretty shit, pretty fucking cool things, man.
Yeah, well, I think you can too, man.
Hey, I appreciate that.
Yeah, don't like to say that I'm usually good at usually good judge of character.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're a really smart, motivated dude.
Well, thank you.
And yeah,
I appreciate that. I think I feel the same way about you.
Thanks, man.
Hell yeah, man. Well, any last words or messages for your fans before we get out here?
Oh, just take her easy, man. And listen.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. That's great advice. Cool. Well, that's Charlie White, everybody, and we'll get on out of here after that. And thank you very much for everybody for listening. However many people do end up listening, I'm sure we'll have some new listeners on this. Good. Thanks to Charlie. Please share this episode. It'd be nice.
Thanks, guys.
And, everybody, thank you very much for listening. Have a great night.